I do believe it's time to scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. We'll be visiting today with Kai Swanson, Special Assistant to Augustana College President Steve Malls. Then it's on to the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor on Scribble. And Kai Swanson, Special Assistant to the President, that has, you know, kind of a Washington's kind of ring to it.
Well, it sure covers a lot of territory.
Well, you know, we're interested in reading and writing.
Yes.
How much writing do you do?
Well, you might be surprised. It's enough that, you know, I've been on the board of the National Association of Presidential Assistants in Higher Education, which is proof that everybody gets a club, right?
Right.
And for the last couple of years, they've actually had me lead workshops called Writing Tips for the PA, the President's Assistant, because it's a very writing-intensive job. Leaders have to communicate, and probably the more and more effectively they communicate, the more effective their leadership is. So it's not an insignificant part of the job, is helping with the President's strategic communications. So it's a lot of writing.
Mm-hmm. Does that include speech writing?
Not really. I mean, in my case, I'm very fortunate is that the president of Augustana College, I think you know the guy, Steve Balls, you've had him on the radio before. His background is as a debater at the University of Iowa and as a lawyer. He's a JD from Northwestern. And so he's a very adept communicator. So in a finished speech, you're looking at least 70% of that material is right out of his first draft. But he may turn it over to me to do a little context setting, maybe some fact checking, and maybe some smoothing and polishing. And the goal would be that when you hear him speak, nothing doesn't sound like he wrote it. Because, I mean, he has written the vast majority of it. And the point would then be to make sure that if there's anything I do to help the speech in any way, that my fingerprints are nowhere on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little tricky.
How do you do that? And that is really tricky because, I would suspect that most people hear about Augustana from Kai Swanson, right? I mean, you go around to alumni groups, you go around to other groups, and you represent the college, right?
Not nearly as much as he does. I mean, you may see that sometimes here at a local Rotary, but remember, he's speaking all over the country.
But so you travel
a little
quite
bit.
A bit.
Well, and so to answer your question, how that's done, and this is what I tell younger colleagues in the profession, is the first thing you do is you read everything they've written. And like I said, Steve is a prolific writer. I mean, if you look on his resume and CV or on the web, he has written dozens of journal articles and all sorts of things. He's got a couple of books that he's written. So the first thing I did was started to read everything I could that he had written to start to get his voice and his pacing. And it's helpful, too, that he's totally a Midwesterner. He's from central Iowa, so he talks like us. And that's very helpful. But I imagine if somebody were coming from a different area, I mean, I got to actually write a few communications of a very different sort for President Treadway, and that was a different kind of a voice. You know, it's great that Steve Balls, for instance, loves Shakespeare. Yeah, I don't know if you knew this, Don, and Roald, but every year, at the college, we have the homecoming Vi King and Vi Queen. And what they have gotten from the president of the college since Steve's been here is a very handsome, leather-bound collected works of Shakespeare he gives to each of those students. He loves Shakespeare, and he loves theater. He also loves Lincoln. He loves Dr. King. So you read some of those things, and you start to piece together what the voice should sound like. And it's not, I shouldn't say should, it's what his voice does sound like. And that's how you get started.
Well, I've heard him speak off the cuff, and I've always been impressed because he speaks in a very collected way. And I pay very close attention to off-the-cuff speaking because I love that. And I've heard him, and though he never puts a false foot, he really doesn't.
Well, I'll have to tell a little tale here. This is when I was just starting in his office, which happens to be about 10 years ago. He was making an address, and I wrote nothing of it. All I did was I proofed it, and I put it into slightly larger font and double-spaced it so it's ready for platform copy, right? And we were talking about the lovely trees on our campus. And he interjected a slight side, just a throwaway comment that he had overheard, I think, probably from a conversation with you, Doc, tweet, where he said, "Some might say too many trees," referencing that great editorial yes. cartoon you had done years and years ago. And those several words occupied the next 6 months of my life in explaining to faculty and others that, no, we were not clear-cutting the Augustana campus. It was a throwaway line. But, no, he's a very – like I said, his background's a debater, so he's a very careful communicator. And he's also very generous. I mean, when he's done with a talk, sometimes we'll go over some things. And one of the things that he's changed over time is, you know, a debater, right? You're talking about words per minute. You want to get as right. many words out as possible. And there are times when a president simply has to slow down.
Oh, yeah.
And so the trick was, you know, he's got some beautiful grandchildren, and he's read to his children since they were infants. And I said, well, imagine you're reading a story. And what pace do you take with that?
You've talked a little bit about his preparation for what he does. What turns out to have been for you the best preparation for this job? You don't major in presidential assistant.
Right.
Were there classes you took? What would you recommend to somebody who says, I want to be president's assistant?
Well, as far as the writing goes, it would have to be that, and this is probably some advice that one of you turned me on to, but I remember someone once said, if you want to be a writer, read a lot. And so reading good communicators, I think, makes you write better, right? So in college, I took a lot of history. I took a lot of literature. Unfortunately, it was in a language other than English, and that doesn't always translate. But I also had a pretty good writing prof my freshman year. Who had these crazy assignments, you know, to write a whole paper and only use monosyllabic words. You know, what did you give us, three multisyllabic words?
I let you use two.
It was two. Yes. Okay, it was two. Another one was to write an entire essay and only use the letter, was it N? What letter were we not allowed to use?
You couldn't use E, I think.
E. We couldn't use E for an entire paper. This guy was absolutely terrible. I mean, it was just, ugh.
Oh, he's inflicted poetry contests like that.
I know.
On our listeners.
It's terrible, but you know the benefit is it makes you think about what you're writing, right? Mm-hmm. But I will say though, Doc, I'm not going to give you all the credit. I'll give the other guy in the microphone here. When you work in a radio newsroom, and not just any radio newsroom, but a public radio newsroom, right? You don't have to boil everything down to 10 seconds, but you do have to get it in under a minute for the most part for a story, right? And so you really have to be thoughtful about not just what do I want to say? You have to think about what impact do I want to have, right? What mm-hmm. what is the message I want to convey? And I think it's about mindfulness. So, nothing prepares you to be a special assistant to a president. That's what I like about our annual gatherings of NAPAHE is that we find out where people came from, and it's all over the map. It's all over the map.
You talk about writing, but how about reading? I imagine you have to be a source of information for the president as well.
Right. And unfortunately, there was a quote attributed to Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. That he used in several addresses. And until I wanted to find out where it was first used. And we actually found out that it was apocryphal, like many quotes are. And this is widely attributed to Holmes Jr. And I think he probably could have gotten away with using it because it was very obscurely noted that this was apocryphal. But, you know, he is, you know, true to his debate roots, he cast it aside and he doesn't use it anymore, unless he says, long believed to have been the idea of Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. I listen to my public radio station to hear what's going on in the world. I read my hometown newspaper. I do whatever reading. I will say, though, if I'm not reading enough for fun, my writing starts to suffer. I've noted that. My writing gets a little bit, you know, well, it bores me. And if it bores me, it's more than likely going to bore you. So I have to go back and read things that that I enjoy reading, clever things. I like Douglas Adams, to go back to that from time to time. And, of course, Tolkien, you know, because he just knew how to construct things very well. And good historians. I like to read good historians.
Tweet, you know, we've talked about writing and reading. And what constitutes good writing? I've come around to think that it should be, it should sound like a conversation. But I found the tendency, particularly early on, I would write very stilted sentences, too formal.
Well, I think we all begin that way, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, we try to imitate. I look back at some of the stuff I thought was really great, and it's just horrible. The best advice I ever heard, we had a Jesuit priest who taught at Augie after he retired from the priesthood, Father Bond, you may remember him. He taught at Augie for a couple of years, and he had boiled the teaching of writing down from all the 300 rules that you get in an average freshman English text to just two. One, see what's there, and two, tell the truth. And those are the two hardest things in the world to do.
Yeah, that's true. You're always tempted to be artful. You're always tempted to be, I don't know, just a little, I don't know how to put it in words, but the temptation is always strong to go away from being just plain, to be a little fancy.
Right. I'll tell you one story that I always come back to is presidents of universities and colleges have long found ways to communicate voluminously without doing much work, right?
Right.
And my favorite is a story about a president. The way I heard it was a president at Yale in the early part of the 20th century who simply had 10,000 pre-printed cards produced that said nothing more than, "Dear sir, you may in fact be right." And you know, who presidents get a lot of correspondence. They get a lot of people who think they know how to run the institution better than this person possibly could have, and they get a lot of advice. And so I've always thought that was genius. And, you know, if there's a way to save a little bit of the president's time, that's one of the part of the job that I like.
I think one of the interesting things that has happened over the years is that clearly people's views of Augustana have changed or altered because you're the person that speaks for them. In what way have your views of Augustana changed because of your job, or grown, or altered?
Oh, I think if anything, my feelings for it have become much deeper because I realize how impermanent and imperfect it is. I mean, if you really take a look, and a lot of this is reading the college's history. I mean, that's what I tell young colleagues in the field as well, is make sure you know your institution's history and where you come from. But if you look at it, that phenomenon you just described, Roald, of how people's views of the college have changed, well, that started the day the college opened. And you know, every week that's gone by, people's views have changed about it, and that will always be. It has been many, many things over 155 years. But what's fascinating to me is that it is always, it's always trying to do its best. And I don't think it's ever stepped away from that. There were times when you know, I read some of the that is another part of the job that we didn't really get to, is I had the great gift of looking at two manuscripts of Thomas Treadway, of the history of the college and his biography of Conrad Bergendorf in the production stages, which is incredibly illuminating, right? But it teaches me that this has always been a community made up of people, and as such, it will always be infallible. It will always be fallible and prone to making mistakes. But, you know, God love us, we sure try hard. And that's been the case for the college for 155 years. And if it keeps on the trajectory it's on now, it'll continue to do that. But learning the college's history and the president's voice are two keys to being in this position, I think.
What are you charged with writing regularly?
Well, I'm helping to—usually what will happen is, because Steve is a great quick writer. He'll go ahead and he'll prepare a first draft, and then I'll take a look at it and make suggestions of, you know, different angles he might want to expound on, things he might not want to do as much of, and it becomes a more collaborative process, but he's in the lead. Sometimes if it's some stuff that is, an example is right now we're working on a newsletter, and we talked about some ideas of the stories, and I'm gathering the information he needs from a variety of colleagues. So one of the things we want to talk about is our incredible program in Nicaragua, where our students get to go and work in a clinic outside of Granada, Nicaragua. And I need that information from Dr. Dara Wegman-Gedi. So I'm collecting that information, present it to the president, and make sure that his fingerprints are all over it, and then out goes a newsletter. Mm-hmm. But mostly, it's rarely is it a first draft. It's usually taking some thoughts of his and then just formatting them, shaping them, and putting them that way. So,
what kind of, you know, it seems to me there are all kinds of communiques coming out of the college from different departments, not just the president's office. Are you charged with reading all of that?
No, thank heavens, no. It's enough to just watch the president's office. But I have great colleagues in our Office of Communications and Marketing. The Academic Affairs Office, our provost, Perina Lawrence, has a weekly newsletter where she's sharing news of exciting things that the faculty are doing. The president's newsletter is usually every couple of months, and it's about things that are coming out of the board level that we want to communicate with colleagues across the campus.
Mm-hmm. So you're not charged with reading all that material?
No, but I tell you what, it makes my job easier when I do.
Yeah.
When I know what others are saying, and make sure we're all on the same page. That really does help a lot.
You are probably the busiest guy on campus. The standard view of Kai across campus is walking with a cup in his hand, leaning forward so that he's falling, making him go a little faster onto his next assignment.
That's one perspective. Well, my father used to read while he walked, and that I found I didn't have the facility for. I got a couple of near concussions doing that, but that was enough. But
no.
I do try to edit while I walk. I have to say this. That's a great way to prepare for the job, by the way. I live by car maybe 5 minutes from campus, but by walk I live an ideal 32 minutes from campus. And when I have a writing challenge, that is the most productive 32 minutes of my day, is as I'm walking, I can think about things differently than if I'm sitting at a desk. And by the time I get back to my desk, boom, the logjam's clear.
Are you consciously thinking as you're walking? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I used to, when I wrote Rock Island Lines, if I got stuck, I would take a 3 mile walk. I had your dad gave me the idea for this, take a walk through a neighborhood, the same walk all the time, so I could see what changes were made.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't think about it. But by the time I got back to VIK and sat down at the computer, somehow my mind had solved the problem.
But doesn't that make good brain science? I mean, Don, all the actors you've seen who try to memorize lines, if they're just sitting there silently doing it, they can't get the lines down, right? But if they do something tactile or physical, and
right.
I mean, I used to just walk on that little, you know, that railing, go back and forth, and you know, you'd think you're occupying your mind on balance, which maybe you are, but yeah, I think walking helps. It detaches certain levels of the brain and allows deeper ones to flourish and play.
Well, you don't want to detach too much of your brain because you really need it in your job. Kai Swanson, Special Assistant to the President of Augustana College, Steve Walls. I know you've got a busy day. Thanks for coming over to chat with us.
Thank you.
And with that, we will go to our other fixture here, Garrison Keillor.